Welcome to the Self-Expression Center and to Speaking from the Heart, Part 1. It's like a serial movie. There's Part 1 and Part 2. There actually are several other parts, but I don't get to do them very often. It's really these first two sessions that carry the main, the basics of what I have to share with you. And I'm going to talk a lot tonight. I want to start by just talking a little bit about the center and what I do here and a little bit about me and how this all came about, how this got started. The Self-Expression Center is my incubator. What I am doing here is attempting to create an environment that feels safe enough for people to come in from the outside world and experiment with and explore their ability to express, communicate, present, perform with authenticity. And the idea has always been to sort of take people away from the business environment, away from the way it is in corporate training and that kind of stuff, so that people feel safe enough to do some opening up. This Speaking from the Heart series is really basically a process for developing a style of presentation that's based on being who you are. Very different from traditional presentation training. You'll see fairly soon that it's probably not what you would expect in a presentation course. The idea here and the experience of the process is to learn to stand up and speak from who you are, from who you truly are, rather than from what you think you should be. Does that make sense? I don't know what it is about presentation or presentation training, but there is some kind of illusion of perfection about it that is gripping for many people. There's some kind of image in our heads about what it's supposed to look like, and it almost never matches who we really are. When you think about what you should look like as a presenter, it almost never fits. And that's part of why it's so uncomfortable for so many people. Because there's some kind of sense that you've got to be something other than what you are, and that's very scary. Everything that I do here at the center is really about supporting people in feeling more comfortable and more confident, being authentic. Being authentic when they perform, when they present, when they communicate, you know, in whatever aspect of life they find themselves. So classes here include the Speaking from the Heart classes, but also some acting classes, which I call Acting for Non-Actors, which is really good stuff. Jeff's been in several of those now. And some communication work, again, sort of from my particular slant. And my slant has to do with being present for people when we communicate, making a strong connection and learning to receive them rather than pushing all of your information at them. I actually became a presentation coach because I had so much stage fright. That is really ultimately the impetus that got me to what I'm doing here in this series of classes. I actually have a master's degree in theater. I went all the way through that program without ever dealing with or interfacing with or interacting with my stage fright in any form or shape. Because I didn't know what was happening to me. It's not that I was a bad actress, but it's that I never really could connect to the source of my talent in front of other people. I was great when I was rehearsing alone. I could really get to that juice. So I knew it was in me, but when I would actually perform, this sort of curtain would come up and would create a kind of a veil, a disconnect. I did not know what that was at the time, But whatever it was very disappointing to me and frustrating because I could not connect to that juice, that talent in front of others. And I actually was a professional actress for a while. I did a lot of commercials here in Houston. I finally gave up on acting and went into other directions. I found myself at a certain point living in Hawaii, living on Maui, and I decided to get involved in a theatrical production there. I auditioned for Camelot and got cast in the role of Morgan Le Fay, which is sort of the fairy queen of the play. And I had a very interesting experience while I was performing. One night while I was on stage, kind of in the middle of my big speech, a shift happened to me, and it happened out of an accident that happened while I was on stage. I had built this costume that was fairly flimsy, you know, kind of gauzy fabric wrapped all around me, and it was all held together by this belt that snapped at the waist. Why I did that, I don't know. But this particular night, as I was crossing the stage and doing my lines, and I probably had my arms open, I felt that belt unsnap. And it was so instantaneous. In that split second, I mean, you know, because I could, in that split second, I could see myself losing my costume in front of 500 people. And something shifted inside of me. I got all of a sudden instantly real present. I felt my spirit expand to fill that entire auditorium. I became huge. My experience, my inner experience was that I was enormous. And I was so present to the moment. I could feel everything that I was feeling. I knew what I was thinking. I was in touch with all of my movements. And without missing a beat, I, as Morgan, reached down and grabbed that belt and snapped it into place. I never missed a line, a beat, or anything. And it was an incredible experience. I felt the energy of the audience coming at me, and it was delicious. And I was no longer acting. I was being on stage, and it was magnificent. And for the first time in that moment, I was really connected to the source of my talent in front of others. Unfortunately, it did not happen again.
For
the rest of that show. And I only had small, you know, it was a fairly small part. That scene that I was in was sort of my big scene. It was, you know, my scene stealer scene. It was only at the most 5 minutes. But I was buzzing. It was one of those expansions of awareness, peak experience, whatever you want to call that, that was in the zone, as they now say. Whatever it was an incredible experience. And I didn't have a clue how it happened, why it happened, or how to get back to it. And it was really 2 or 3 years later when I was back in Houston and I was teaching acting classes at the Country Playhouse. I was noticing that my acting students were showing the same symptoms that I had experienced. They were bright, sensitive, charming, talented, creative people. But when they got up to perform, something would happen. The personality would seem to disappear. And they would be emoting, but the feelings, the emotions were not connected to who they were. So it was false. It wasn't authentic. And it was often stiff and wooden. And I went, oh, whatever that is, I want to figure out how to work with this. And that was what stimulated me to put a class on the schedule over there, which at that time I called performance dynamics. And I decided I was going to figure out how to work with performance anxiety, stage fright, and how to develop a sense of presence on stage. And I just used my intuition little by little And here we are. That was 10 or 11 years ago. And I've been doing this ever since. This particular six-week course is going to focus on three or four simple things. Simple. Well, maybe simple. The first one is transforming any tension, stage fright, performance anxiety, that stuff that gets stirred up under the skin when we become the center of attention, in shifting that, consciously working to shift that to create a sense of presence, to be much, to have a greater sense of presence and to feel more present in the moment when you're standing there speaking. We'll begin to do some work with speaking authentically, meaning just letting ourselves speak what's there to be said, which is very powerful when you can trust yourself to do that. And we'll be working on learning to just let it flow. The second 6 weeks of this process, we'll really get into doing more speaking, thinking it out on our feet, again, letting it flow, working on that connection, creating that palpable sense of connection. By then, you'll be much more comfortable, if you're not already comfortable, and much more able to feel like you can just stand up and let it come through you. Then we can work on the subtlety of making that connection. What we're going to do is work as a group here. You will be working as a group to support each other in being authentic in front of this small group. To be more relaxed, to be more open, to allow who you are to shine through, to let yourself have your real thoughts and feelings, and that really is going to be the key to this whole process. So let's talk for a minute about authenticity. I'm just curious what people think of when you think of authenticity. What does it mean to you in your life?
Some part of it has to do with the inner sincerity of a person.
Yeah.
Truthfulness in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a belief almost.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's very close to what I think it is. Do you some work with this?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I think of being authentic as being connected to who you are, to how you're feeling, what you're thinking,
yes,
and having the inside match up with the outside.
Exactly. You took it right out of my mouth. Those two things, being connected to what you're really feeling and really thinking on the inside and having the external expression match the internal reality. That's what I think of as authenticity, and that's very powerful. And there isn't necessarily a lot of support for that in the business community. What I have learned is that the degree of comfort I have presenting is directly related to the degree of authenticity that I will allow myself to be. You agree? Do you want to say more?
I'm just thinking about the experiences that I've had. If I'm presenting something or doing something that I really wholeheartedly believe in, it's much, much easier than if I'm in a sort of figurehead situation.
Mm-hmm. Because if you're just a figurehead, it's like being a shell, and who you are is detached from that, and it's very awkward, isn't it? And this is my bone. You don't have to agree with this. I think a lot of presentation training teaches people that outer shell without necessarily getting them connected to the inside. And so then it becomes sort of mechanical. Or it can be mechanical. It doesn't have to be. Mm-hmm. And there we are trying to match that the image of that shell without having the self be fully present, and it makes for a kind of an uncomfortable experience for some people. You've done a lot of work with this. Do you have anything to add?
There's no question about it. If you, I agree with what you said, Sandra, about presentation and training, because I've been involved in Toastmasters, and a lot of that training that you have is more on the technical side, vocal variety, things of that nature. But there are, I don't think I can remember once anyone talking about presentation with sincerity and with authenticity, making your inner core beliefs match what you're saying.
Yeah. But you can see it when someone's doing it, can't you?
No question about it. They're much more, you know, believable, and there's a sense of power in the room.
Yes.
They connect to the audience.
Talk about that power in the room.
Those people who have that, and not everybody does, and it's a small number of people, and you can tell them, not whether you're in a room with them or they're on television, that it's better when you're present. You can just sense the dynamics of everyone in the room, no matter who they are, connecting with that speaker. And it's powerful.
It is. And you know what?
It doesn't matter what they say sometimes.
I know.
Or how they say it.
Yeah.
Or if they use proper grammar.
Not at all. None of that matters. The presence of the Spirit there touches people. And you know, you have a lot of it. Did anybody sense that when he was speaking, that there was a shift in the energy in the room? I felt it very strongly when you were speaking. Could you feel that? We're going to start to get real sensitive to this. Anything else? That's a lot, isn't it? I want to talk a little bit about stage fright or performance anxiety and tell you some of the things that I've learned about it. Just to begin with, there is some very good news about this issue that I have discovered in the last several years. Those of us that have the most stage fright have the potential to be the most impactful speakers. We actually have the potential to be the most exquisite speakers. Can you even imagine?
Hard on that one.
Can you imagine? Can anybody imagine why that might be true? Yeah? No?
Well, only because you're sensitive to what's going on in your environment, and you're picking that up and registering it.
And even more than that, it's because we have the feelings. We're sensitive enough to have the feelings stirred in the body and not have it crunched down. So the feelings are up to the surface enough where if you can learn to direct them, to make an emotional bridge, to use that emotional energy to create an emotional connection with your audience, with your jury, then you're going to touch people on a much deeper level. Stage fright is always, or performance anxiety, call it what you will. Sometimes I just call it tension. Whatever you call it, it is always about fear of judgment and an expectation that we should be perfect. It always comes from that. That expectation of perfection, the desire to create an illusion of perfection, stirs up a great deal of emotional intensity inside the central nervous system. Yeah? Does that ring true for you?
No question about it. Particularly when it's a business environment, more than a speech. Speeches, for me, aren't as difficult as it is to present in a business environment.
So what is it about the business environment?
You nailed it. There's a sense that you've got to be perfect.
Yeah.
And everything that you say has to be perfect.
Yeah.
And every response has to be perfect.
Even though it's not the truth, it's the expectation.
Your own expectation.
Yes. Yeah.
And it creates an inner tension. And then what you say doesn't come out as effective.
I know.
It's a sort of self-fulfilling feedback loop, I think. You know,
of course.
Like sweating. You sweat. Oh my gosh, I'm sweating.
And it goes round and round,
yeah,
doesn't it?
And it feeds on itself.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of stress, though. It's a strange thing, but I mean, there's a certain amount of stress that's almost addictive.
I agree.
You know, that makes it a sort of especially dangerous, I think. One can almost like aspects of it and feed on it.
I think a lot of people in business do that.
Uh-huh.
I think it's dangerous, but I sort of fight that in myself all the time. It's very easy to get wound up. Well, here's what happens. When we become the center of attention, if we're sensitive, if our feelings are up to the surface, if we have this expectation of perfection, if we have this fear of judgment, then we become the center of attention and the central nervous system fires off a great deal of intensity inside. The adrenals go cuckoo. And there's a great deal of sensation that gets stirred up in the body, a great deal of feeling that gets stirred up in the body. You cannot think it away with your mind because it's more powerful than the mental part of you. It's biochemical. So we get up to be the center of attention and we're standing there and all of this stuff gets stirred in here. And if we can't avoid it, if we can't avoid the situation by never going into it, and you've got to stand there, and it's so intense, then there's only one thing to do. Leave. Leave your body. In a sort of a way, what we do is instantaneously, it happens so fast, we pull energy and awareness and sensation up into the head, above the neck. And the head starts to feel real swollen. And you can see it in the eyes get real big. And from the neck down, what we do is tighten the flow of feeling so that we don't have to feel it. So it's like the mental part is disconnecting from the physical, emotional part. And there you are, kind of like this. And you're not integrated, you're disintegrated. Does that fit? And, you know, you're trying to be warm and friendly, but you've disconnected from your feelings. You've gone unpresent, unconscious, and you can't think clearly because your head's kind of swollen. Is this right?
That's perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. I never heard anybody articulate this before I figured this out. And every time I do it, somebody goes, oh, yes! So it's a kind of disintegration. It's not a psychotic break. But it's a way of going unpresent, going unconscious. It's a way of getting the hell out of Dodge without actually running out the door. So it's a kind of abandoning the self. You cannot stand there and be fully present for yourself, with them. And it's very difficult to think. You can't think clearly. Do you know this? And we become what I call ungrounded or unpresent. The healing for this, if I can borrow that term, the way to shift this is to begin to validate yourself and to be validated for feeling, experiencing, and expressing your true feelings in front of a group. It is not something I think can be done fully by yourself. I think it requires a group. There's something about group energy that is so powerful. It constellates family of origin stuff, I'm absolutely certain. You know, group becomes family. So all those issues a family of origin get somehow constellated or triggered in stage fright. It's how I used to say it is, it's like the audience, we project our expectation of perfection on the audience, and the audience becomes a sort of giant critical parent. Right?
That's a good way to put it.
So what it takes to what it takes is a group that is willing to validate you, to make you okay, to support you for what you really feel. And as the group supports each person in authentic expression, people begin to relax into themselves. The tension clears out. I mean, almost sometimes instantaneously and magically. And you land back in your body. You reground in front of the body with a flow of feeling in you. Your natural, organic flow of energy, spirit, aliveness, chi, soul, whatever you want to call that. The opposite of stage fright is presence. And what we're going to be doing in a very real sense is shifting from stage fright, tension, to presence. Presence is relaxing fully into your body and into your being, so that you have all of yourself available to be in that moment, to have the experience, do the expressing, interact, or whatever it is that you're doing. So it's a relaxing into the body and letting the feelings flow, and as you said earlier, getting connected to those feelings and using that emotional energy to bridge, connect with the audience that you're speaking to. When you do that, you become very powerful as a presenter. Not perfect. It is my experience that when I'm really cooking, when I'm really connected and really present, I can never quite do it perfectly. Because creativity is so spontaneous and in the moment, and it's jerky sometimes. And part of the process that you're going to be going through, assuming you stay for it, is to let go of your expectation that it has to be so perfect and to let yourself flow and let it come out with all the passion of your spirit and let that be the effect on people. It will be much more effective on them when you let go of perfection. You had a question? Are you with me so far? Please feel free to ask questions or make comments or agree or disagree. Is it making sense? Good. It does to me now, too. It's taken me a long time.
Well, you lay it out so simply. I mean, it's simple. It's very complicated.
Mm-hmm.
I've gone 41 years and haven't understood it. But you lay it out so simply.
It's taken me a long time to understand it simply because it feels complex to me. And yet it is simple.
But I can really relate to the thing you're saying about judgment and perfection and having to do it right. And when you release yourself of that, then it just, I'm sure it can easily open up.
It does open up. And you become so dynamic and so powerful. And your style then comes out of who you are, which is different for everybody. Some people fit that dynamic speaker mold. I don't. I'm more a magnetic speaker. When I speak, I'm more taking you in, receiving you, creating connection. I'm not doing my dynamic speaker, presentation kind of thing. That takes too much energy for me. So you will begin to find your own style based on who you are that will work for you. So you feel like you're being yourself. what we're also going to do is work on what it feels like to be grounded and present. Oh, I know, I didn't finish this little bit about presence. Presence has to do with relaxing fully down into the body, all the way down your legs into your feet, so that you are grounded, so that you have a full body sense of awareness. That creates a palpable presence, so that you're not just up in your head. Americans largely carry themselves up in their heads. And people who are stars in their field generally have a very palpable presence to them because they are so relaxed into who they are and so full of self-acceptance that they're not having to tense up and be in the head. So one of the things that will develop for you out of this class is a much stronger sense of grounded presence, and it feels real good. And we're going to get into that a little bit later tonight. Grounding is maybe the most effective antidote to stage fright or performance anxiety that I've ever found, and I'm going to teach you how to do that. Your eyes went, what is that? What I'd like to do is stop talking for a little while and let you talk a little bit. I'd like to do some introductions and ask you to tell us who you are and anything about what you do in real life that you want to tell us, and also why you came, why you showed up here, what you would like to get out of it if I had a magic wand and could wave it over you. What would you like to go away with? I'm going to take notes.
Before we start, then, I'd like to do something about that noise.
That's the fountain. You want to go unplug it?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. We'll go unplug it. It's out in the lobby, you know?
He's just a sensitive guy.
Yes, he is. I see, I like that sound. But if you know it's a fountain, it sounds good. But if you think it's a toilet running,
it's that's true. You have this beautiful picture of Brooks,
yeah.
Waterfalls.
Would anybody like to start?
Well, I'll start.
Thanks.
My name is David, and I think my entire life I've suffered from stage fright, and I feel fairly comfortable in a group environment, a smaller group environment. I don't really have that much of a problem talking, especially around a table. Mm-hmm. But there's I've had to decline some speaking invitations in front of large groups of people, and I've regretted that just out of pure stage fright.
Mm-hmm.
Particularly, like for some reason, I feel very comfortable sitting down, but if I had to stand
up,
especially in front of a large group,
yeah,
that's something that I would avoid at all costs.
What do you do? Tell everybody what you do and what you would be talking about if you were out there doing those invitations.
I mean, I don't get a lot of invitations to speak, but I have gotten some that I would like to like to have participated in. For example, I get, I've been invited back by my old school to talk, and different things like that. But
mm-hmm.
I always make some sort of, excuse or avoid those mm-hmm. kind of presentations. And
yeah.
I'd like to be able to accept them and
what did they
impart my dribble.
What did they invite you to speak about?
Nothing really. They just ask us, I graduated from an honor society there, and they, invite people to come and talk, and
mm-hmm.
They really don't want you to talk about anything except, I guess, your experience with the school.
Sure.
It's a very small thing, but it is a fear of mine, and I'd like to, stare in the eye, and rather than for the rest of my life, It's like having, if any of y'all have ever played tennis, it's like having a weak backhand.
Yeah.
You know, you can only run around your backhand so much, and then, it gets tiring after a while.
It's also kind of like having a glass ceiling, you know, not being able to go past a certain point.
Oh, sure. Yeah, it's.
I'm so glad you're here. You have a wonderful voice. Do you know that?
No. In fact, I don't like to, for example, hear myself on a tape recorder or anything. That makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Well, you have a beautiful sound.
You have a good voice.
A lot of resonance in it. It's going to gonna be fabulous for speaking.
Must be all the plus cigars and whiskey. And
probably. Thank you, Damon. Should we just proceed around the circle and let you be second?
Yeah, well, good eye, Mike. My name is Jimmy Outback, and I'm here from Australia. No, seriously, I work at Rice and in facilities management, and I've been there for 7 years, and I give presentations there from time to time, but I don't do it professionally. My real desire is to, well, I'm moving into the field of leadership and human development, and that's a real passion of mine, a real love, and I just see to educate and encourage and empower people. I've seen the results to some extent in myself, but to be able to free yourself and to help others free themselves to really be what they want to be, help them see opportunities is really what lights me up.
Yeah.
And I could so relate to everything you said about the stage fright, the self-consciousness and all that, and even knowing that intellectually, that quit worrying about yourself, and that kind of thing. I was in Toastmasters for a while several years ago. Boy, it was painful. I knew I wanted to share and express. Mm-hmm. And I think I have a lot to share. I think we all do.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, it was tough. And it was just, it was just like painful.
Yeah.
And that's not the way to go, because you don't reach people anyway.
Yeah.
You don't really share a deeper message.
Yeah.
So if I can truly speak from the heart, then I know I can touch people and make a difference.
Yeah, nice. Thank you. Something you said triggered a point. I'll come back to it later. Anyway, thanks. Glad you're here.
My name is Chris, as I've introduced myself to most of you. I'm in the financial services business and have been since I got out of college back in 1990. And about that time, I got involved in Toastmasters because I knew that there was something missing in either presentations or any of my speaking engagements that I was involved in. Every once in a while, I would hit some kind of a great feeling, inner feeling, and it carried over so well and actually got me my very first job out of college. I walked in so confident and immediately bonded and connected with the people who were interviewing me. And it comes and it goes, but it's never consistent. And so I got involved in Toastmasters early on, and I think by not addressing the fear and realizing how to conquer it. And I always had this desire to be perfect and for everything to be perfect in it. When it was fine, but when it wasn't, it was disastrous.
Yeah.
And at least it was disastrous to me. The world didn't come to
right.
me by any means. So somehow I stayed in Toastmasters and continued to be involved in the same financial services business that I'm in. Currently, I work very close with the president of the company. I'm involved in everything that he's involved in. I'm almost as if I'm his right-hand man. And being involved in presentations with him, it is much more. It is much more important to be genuine and to be natural and not be forced. I enjoy it more. I want to enjoy my work more. I don't want to go in and say, this is something I don't want to be doing. This is something I don't want to be involved in. I want my entire job experience to be fantastic, and this will assist me.
Yeah.
So that's kind of my objective, to enjoy life.
There is such joy in presenting when you can just let it come through you. It is a high. There is a connection with the audience where they are just bathing you in love energy. It feels so good to speak from this place, to let go of all that stylistic perfection stuff and let yourself be and let yourself share. It feels so joyful.
You can enjoy life so much more. You don't have those pressures, those inner self-imposed pressures
sure.
you can put on yourself.
Yeah. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
Jeff.
I'm Jeff, and I'm a career computer geek. I've done some training in the work environment on technology and things like that. About 15 years ago, I started teaching part-time at university level, and I teach part-time at the junior college level. And I've learned a lot about how to just get over the fear and get up there and, do the job. And I've been fairly effective in that kind of an environment because I've been the authority. It's not a social type of an environment. It's a, very academic type of environment. I'm God in there, and they, even if they don't like me, they can laugh at me, right? I've been socially hiding all my life from life, and about a year ago, I decided to stop doing that and try to come out and be myself. In all of my jobs, I've risen to positions of technical leadership, but I've never been able to break through and be a people leader.
Wow.
And I don't know necessarily that I wanted. I like being a technical person, but I would at least like to have the opportunity, and I would like to be able to be more social. I don't really necessarily want to speak for a living.
Yeah.
But I want to be more genuine when I do speak. I have lived my life trying to be what I thought the other person wanted me to be in a social environment. And it hasn't worked for me. I've been taking what, 3 acting classes, and I'm in the 4th one now.
Wow.
And I have grown so much in the last 6 months. It's just incredible.
That's great.
As a matter of fact, it's been, I don't want to give Sandra full credit for it, but yeah, at least partially responsible for saving my marriage. I'm very happy to be here and even to get this opportunity to learn some more.
Thanks. Thank you.
My name is Ralph, and I'm a criminal lawyer from Houston. And I think what I need to get out of this class is, I really don't think I have stage fright. I've never had a really problem with speaking with people. I think the way I see myself is a lot of energy without any real direction. And I'd like to get a little focus and have, I guess the only way I can explain it is another tool, another sword, another weapon in which to gain an edge, because I'm selling or I'm speaking every day, whether it's selling somebody and telling them 25 years is really the best thing for you, or I'm trying to get
right.
Or I'm asking the DA, why this guy should get off and the other one should. And when you go to trial, and I'm in trial, and there's times that I'm open one, and it started out from the beginning. And when I very first started, I used to prepare to a T. I mean, I used to prepare everything, but when something went wrong, it all fell apart.
Mm-hmm.
So now I'm at the point where I really don't prepare anything. I kind of shoot from the hip and go from there, which has worked out very well for me. But there are those times where something will go wrong, that I'm not prepared for, whatever, and I can sense myself losing the jury or losing the case right there, and I don't know how to get it back.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most important thing that I'm seeking out of this class.
Mm-hmm. To really hold the jury,
right,
and stay connected to them.
Or I guess the bottom line, to make my bullshit sound more realistic, even when I don't believe it. Even when I don't believe it,
get authenticity.
Forget authenticity.
Authentic bullshit.
We want authentic bullshit, right?
Do you think you're getting bored of your job, or?
Oh no, I love it. It's a game. I mean, and the thing that I guess citizens don't understand: so many games are stacked against you. I mean, they have an 85% conviction rate on trials. I mean, it's their court, their judge, their everything. Mm-hmm. And, I've seen many people who I personally believe are innocent get convicted, mm-hmm, just because the DA is a very good lawyer and the person they hired as their lawyer wasn't that great.
Sure.
And you lose, and they lose all the time, and they don't care. They don't care whether you're innocent. They don't care whether you have a house or your children or anything. They just don't care, and I do everything I can to stop that. Whether it's being getting a couple of weeks off a sentence, or getting a fine instead of a jail time for some guy, so he can hold his job and not lose it, just whatever it takes. And it's hard to deal with them, and mainly because for me it's hard because I really don't know where they're coming from. I came from the North Side. I like to say I grew up with the regular people, and just like this other case I had not too long ago. Where a guy was charged with resisting arrest, and he was sent to Ben Top Hospital and spent a month after being beaten by three cops who weighed 260 pounds, and my guy weighed 150, was 5'4", and the judge couldn't, because he was from West U, he could not comprehend why this little black guy, I mean, his whole world, they just couldn't comprehend it. Why he would talk back to an officer. And, I mean, that's just the way people are, because people in the Fifth Ward are a lot different than where they are.
Okay. Focus. We get it. Focus. We get that you've got energy. Wow. Do you know Tyrone Moncrief?
No, I've heard. I don't know him personally, but I know who he is.
You might want to talk with him. You might want to make a connection with him. I'll tell you some stories about him another time. I did a lot of work with him, and he's really benefited from this training. Glad you're here. We'll have to keep a little leash on you.
What a diverse group.
Yeah, they, it always is.
Well, my name is Barbara Reichlin, and I'm a marital and family therapist. I've been doing one sort of therapy or another for a long time, 30-some-odd years. And I work in full-time private practice, and about 9 years ago, it was 1990, I was looking for a way to improve my work with couples, because I really enjoy working with couples. And I had kind of a wannabe marital practice. I'd have couples come in to me, and invariably they would end up in divorce court. And I would, and a therapist's kind of standard response to that is, well, these people just waited too long, to come into therapy.
Get yourself off the hook.
Get yourself off the hook, that's right. And a lot of times that's true, but the other side is that, I just didn't have the tools that I thought I needed. So I found a particular type of therapy called Imago Relationship Therapy, which comes out of a book called Getting the Love You Want, A Guide for Couples. And I took the specialized training and really turned my practice around and really began having a lot more success in working with couples. And about 4 years after I did the initial training, a friend and a colleague and I went to New York and trained with the guy who developed this model. His name is Harold Hendricks. We trained with him to become certified to do a weekend workshop with couples. And so for about the last 4 years, roughly 5-6 times a year, this friend and I put on a weekend workshop for couples in committed relationships. And it's called Getting the Love You Want. And it's been a real journey. It's been a lot of fun, a lot of work. And I am here because for probably many reasons, but what comes to mind first is that I would really like to be able to improve my presentation style in this workshop. I continue to battle with anxiety in front of a group, even though I get up in front of groups and speak, and it's not like I can't do that, but I get disconnected from me, yeah. And I feel paralyzed by the anxiety, and so I just kind of get very much up in my head, and I don't want to do that. I want to be looser and more relaxed and have more fun.
Yeah.
And as I said to you on the phone, the other reason is that I'm here is that I would really like to get out and start doing more public speaking to advertise the workshop as well as my practice. I've said that for, about the last, 10 years. And the phone always starts ringing about the time I'm about ready to break down and go bite the bullet and go do it. And, my practice fills up, and so I think, I don't need to go do that. Mm-hmm. But I really do need to go do that. In this day of managed care, therapists are... I don't do any managed care. I have all people who pay me out of their pockets, so... And those customers are getting harder to come by because more and more people are having to rely on managed care. So it really behooves therapists to get out and do some marketing. Mm-hmm.
I think you will love it.
I'm hoping, yeah. Speaking has always been one of those things for me. I want to do it, and then I dread to, and then I sign up to do it, and then I go, why in the world?
Yeah.
But then when I finish, I feel great. It gives me, puts me on kind of a high, yeah. Until the next time
it is.
I go.
It is a high.
Yeah, but then that goes away, and then the inertia sets in.
Yeah,
so.
I understand. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Nice group. Varied group. Different. Oh, I'm sorry.
One more.
Forgot about you. How could I forget about you?
Well, I'm Joe, and I am... coming back to Houston after 20 years. I was in College Station, Texas for 10 years and then in Blacksburg, Virginia. And I came back to Houston. I'm in education, and I was a professor in Blacksburg, and it was a very comfortable life. I could just sort of look through and see the end of my life. I mean, it was very predictable, very remote, very beautiful, very quiet, very pastoral. Mm. And I really, my wife and I both wanted more. And a position came up here, which was a real opportunity, but which I knew would require a lot of growth. And part of that growth is to be more confident in front of people. And so I had told my wife about 2 weeks ago after making a presentation, just an introduction for a speaker at an event, that I really knew what the problem was and that I knew that if I could learn to be in the moment in front of people, that everything would be okay. But that I knew that I was always so tense out of it and disconnected, that I wasn't in that moment, and so I would always inevitably, after I finished making an introduction or a presentation, look back on it and say, well, it was so stupid. If I had just done so and so, that was not the end of the world. If I had knocked the microphone off the podium, I could have made a joke about it. But I never had this sort of wherewithal to do that, and then I would blame myself and sort of spiral away. I know why I'm here, though. Not only for any kind of rational situation, but I mean, things in my life in the last year or so are just falling in my lap. I'm here because I'm supposed to be, and I think it's absolutely amazing that I'm here with some of the people, with all of you. it's fantastic.
I can really relate to what you're saying about. Knowing what you need to do intellectually, again, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's a you can know, you know, be absolutely certain. You've learned intellectually what you need to do. You know, and you may have had glimpses of it, but it's just hard to go there.
And it's hard to go there alone.
Yeah.
And what's different about what we're about to embark on is that you don't have to know. This really is not an intellectual process. I don't have a lot of information for you. We'll actually be doing the work in a very quiet, subtle, almost invisible way. Kind of, you know, working below the level of mind in the gut level so that it becomes yours. I'll talk a little bit more about that. This process is a very slow, deep process. We're going to work slowly because we are dealing with fear. Some level of fear or anxiety or tension, which is an energy felt in the body, which is very uncomfortable, and it's much easier to run away and not deal with it. For that reason, I've really designed this to work slowly, a little bit at a time. The process itself is almost invisible. It's not information that you're going to really take home in your brain. It's not. I'm sorry, I don't have it. It is rather a process of transformation from some discomfort to some comfort, from less presence to more presence. So in order to do the work, we kind of have to go up to the edge of our comfort zones. And, you know, because I'm doing it slowly, we're not totally diving in and immersing. That scares the body too much, do you know? If the body gets too scared, you won't come back. So we're going to come up to the edge of the comfort zone and deal with it in little bits as we go along. And you got to go to that edge. If you don't want to go there, then you probably won't stay. You probably won't come back. So for that reason, it is slow. If you're going to make this shift from stage fright or performance anxiety or tension to a palpable presence, then you have to kind of stick it out. You have to stay in the boat and cross the ocean with me. If you bail out, I can't help you. It is very easy to quit this class. It's probably pretty easy to quit your work, the Harville Hendrix work. It's easy to get real busy. You are all very busy people. You're all in careers that require a lot of you. And it's very easy to let that and other things come up, and so you just can't make it. And it looks like, oh, stuff came up and you just can't make it. But really, it's a lack of commitment, or it's a resistance to coming up to that edge of discomfort. So what I want to do is encourage you to make the commitment to stick it out, to stay the course, to stay all the way with me, to keep showing up, even if you feel a little tension about it. Just grit your teeth and drag yourself here. What happens by the end of the class most nights is that you feel so good. You feel more relaxed, more released, more energized, and mostly you kind of sail out of here feeling real high. The worst problem that you may have is going to sleep afterwards. Because we are going to be releasing a lot of juice, a lot of energy. There's another reason for making the commitment to stay, and that is for the good of the whole group. You need each other. For whatever reason, you came to this group with these people. And I trust that you are the right people to be together. So you need each other to be a witness to your process. You need each other to support you, to say, God, you're good. I really like who you are. You are this. You are sensitive. You are so smart. You know, you need that from the other people in the group so that you keep getting validated for being who you are. If you cop out, then the group loses energy. So you got to think in terms of being here not only for your own process, but for each other. So that's my little soapbox. I've been doing this for about 10 years now, and it works. I'm not quite sure how I developed this. It is a kind of gift that was given to me, through me, on an intuitive level. You know, it's in retrospect that I can justify it intellectually, but the work came in an intuitive process for me. And it does work, but it only works if you're here. And it is very gentle and very supportive, but don't be fooled by that. It's very powerful. And I guess it's probably powerful because we're in some sense bypassing the mind. You are very smart people. You have very powerful minds. Everyone in this group is very bright. And your mind is capable of talking yourself into and out of all kinds of stuff. We're going to bypass that part of you and get right down to where we live, which is in the gut, in the spirit. And so for that reason, it is very powerful. One of two things may happen. It may seem so slow and like nothing is happening. And so then your mind can go, oh, well, nothing's happening, so what's the point in coming? Or it may stir up a lot of feelings that you have to interface with in some way and that you'll have to bring back and do some sharing about. Either way, what happens is that as you get nurtured for expressing your authentic self, you begin to radiate. You begin to shine literally with confidence. The spirit part of us is freed when we are nurtured, accepted, and validated for who we really are. So the secret to this whole thing is simply validating each other for what we really feel. And no longer making that wrong. Not making it wrong if we feel fear. But rather making that right, making that okay, allowing that to be a part of who we are in that moment. When we do that, the fear disappears. I am not kidding you. It is. Sometimes it looks miraculous to me that simply by accepting the feeling, it goes whoosh and it clears out. And sometimes it's so startling to you because you are standing there with all this tension in your gut and you address it and it goes whoosh. And it's like not there anymore, and you're feeling comfortable. And if you do that enough, and you do that a little bit at a time, what happens is you begin to feel real comfortable standing present in front of the group. And you begin to be really energized, becoming the center of attention, and connected to that part of yourself that is the juice. The spirit, whatever you want to call that. And the desire to give it becomes very strong. The pleasure of giving that, what you know, what you feel, what you think, becomes very strong. And it actually becomes very fun to present. It's very juicy. So that's what we're going to do. A little bit at a time. By the end of the 6 weeks, you will be a lot more comfortable. Some of you that are already not so uncomfortable or pretty comfortable are going to find that your presence intensifies, that you feel more contained and more in control in a positive sense, that you can direct what you have to say more, that there's not so much barrier. there's not so much distance between you and your audience. So whatever level you're coming in at, this will take you to the next level. And each of you will have a piece for the whole. Every one of you will have a brilliant piece of awareness, an energy, an attitude, something to bring the group that will be a part of the healing. I don't know what it will be, but everyone will have that to give. So, let me step off my soapbox here. We're going to do something a little different now. We're going to shift gears. We're going to put the chairs back against the wall and all this stuff and clear the space and come into a standing circle. Do an experiment. If I'm successful in this experiment in the next few minutes, what I'm going to do intentionally is stir up a little bit of anxiety for you. And what I want you to do with that is just be aware of it. Don't judge it. Don't make it wrong. Don't try to fix it. Just let yourself feel what you feel in the next few minutes. And just pay attention to what happens inside your skin when we do this little exercise. We need to take one step back. Yes, a little too tight. Here's what I'm going to ask you to do. I'm going to ask you to step into the middle of the circle. You knew this, didn't you?
No, I didn't.
No? And kind of open yourself in this sort of Christ-like position. And silently and slowly, do a slow turn around the room and just make a little bit of eye contact with each person. And notice what happens inside as you do that. Just notice. And when you're done, then silently go back to your place. Want to try to keep it quiet so we don't get into giggling or chattering, you know, that will distract us from feeling. I'll start so you can just see what it looks like. Okay, anybody can start in no particular order, just when you're ready.
For purposes of this tape recording, I've edited out the next 5 minutes of silence while the participants go into the circle to become the center of attention.
Everybody take a breath. Make sure you survived. Everybody okay? What I'm going to do is take you through a grounding exercise. It's a kind of an in-the-body meditation. And what you need to do is find a chair and sit on it. You don't have to pull them back into a circle. Just pick a chair around the circumference and just sit anywhere. I mentioned grounding a little bit earlier. Grounding is a way of shifting awareness out of the head and redistributing it throughout the entire physical body, all the way down through the legs into the feet. It's, if you're into martial arts, you would know the term because they talk about putting their chi down, getting grounded so that you don't get knocked off in martial arts. It's what happens, you know, after you've been in a good workout or after a good massage, you feel yourself relax into your skin and you feel whole and integrated and kind of all in one piece and relaxed and confident and comfortable in your skin. What we're going to be shooting for this entire process is getting more comfortable in the skin in front of the group. So grounding is a kind of a in-the-body meditation. It's a kind of visualization. It's a little bit different than some forms of meditation. In some forms of meditation, you're working to get up and out, to get connected to spirit in a above sense. This is about coming down in, bringing consciousness more fully into the physical form. It's very relaxing. It feels good. If you have a mind that goes real fast, then this may be a challenge. If you have a mind that wants to be up and out there, you know, ahead of yourself, then what we have to do is learn to slow down and come down in here and contain consciousness, contain awareness, contain feeling in the body. It will help you focus. It will help you relax. It'll take us about 10 minutes, maybe 12. And so just do the best you can with this. I'm going to talk you through it. And we'll just see what effect it has on you and see if you like it. What I like to do is start by putting my feet flat on the floor and touching the ground. Make sure that the bottoms of my feet touch the ground. And we're going to take a few deep diaphragmatic breaths. We'll work on that later. But for now, just take some deep breaths into your gut like this. And exhale. Each time you exhale, yeah, it'll make you yawn. Each time you exhale, think about letting the weight of your body put your feet flat. Feel how your feet want to do that? Yeah. Each time you exhale, kind of get a sense that the weight of your body shifts down or melts downward into the chair that you're sitting on and into the ground. And if you're comfortable, close your eyes and let's do a little more of this diaphragmatic breathing. Think about letting the weight of your body melt downward into the chair and into the ground underneath you, as though gravity is kind of taking your weight down. So you can feel your seat on the chair. And you can feel the earth underneath you. The earth is very strong. You can trust it. You can relax your weight down into the ground and the ground will catch you. And just relax your breath. Don't even need to worry about your breath now. Bring your attention inside your head. Bring your awareness inside the bones of your head. And pay attention in there. See if you notice that there's a kind of energy buzzing around, a movement in your head. Mostly we have pretty busy heads, bless you. Our heads oftentimes kind of buzz and there's a lot of movement inside when we pay attention. See if you can let some of the energy from your head start to drain down your neck. See if you can let some of it kind of flow down the back of your neck and let it start to flow into your chest. See if you can let it flow into the front part of your chest and begin to fill up the front of the chest so that the chest kind of swells on the inside. It makes you aware of being in your chest. And see if you can let some of the energy flow around to the sides of your chest. And let it flow around to the back of your chest. And let your entire chest feel more full, more like you're in there. You're aware of being in that part of your body. And then let some energy from your chest start to flow down, drain down into your diaphragm region. And begin to fill up the gut part of your body. See if you can create a kind of a solid middle, midsection, like the trunk of a tree, like you have a thick waist. Kind of let that energy flow all the way around your waist. And now let the energy drain down past your waist and into the pelvis. We'll work on filling up the pelvic girdle. See if you can let it flow down into the front part of your pelvis, the lower belly. And let it fill the lower belly. And let it flow around to the sides of the pelvis. And around to the back. And let the whole pelvis feel more full, more solid, more heavy. As the pelvis fills, it feels like you sit down more deeply inside your pelvis and inside your body. So you can really feel the weight of your tush on the chair. And then let some energy flow around your hip joints. Just kind of flow around the joints and begin to flow down your thighs. You could think of water flowing down. I like to make mine like liquid concrete or lava. See if you can let some energy flow down the thighs so that the thighs start to feel more heavy and more solid. And push it down towards your knees. If you have trouble getting it past the hip joints, you can actually just think of pushing it down the thighs. And let it flow around your knees. And begin to drain down your calves. Let it flow down your calves, filling the bones. Think about filling the bones in your calves. So your calves get more solid feeling and warmer. And let it drain down around your ankles. Flow around the ankles. Sometimes to me it feels like putting lead weights around my ankles. And then let it drain or flood down into your feet, just like pouring lead down into your feet. Let that energy flow so that your feet feel longer. And let it spread so that your feet feel wider. what you want to feel are heavy feet. You want to feel a sense of weight in the feet. And focus at the arches of your feet. So pay attention to the arches. We have high energy centers at the arches of the feet. See if you can feel a kind of a tingle or a vibration or a pulsation at the arches. And try to intensify that. And imagine that you drop some energy from the arches of your feet down into the ground, just as though you are growing thick tap roots and sinking your roots deep into the earth, so that you anchor your feet to the ground. And please take a deep breath or two. And each time you exhale, just let the weight of your body melt downward into the ground. Now feel your feet. Feel whatever weight, heaviness you can feel in your feet. And hold on to that sensation as much as you can feel. That's all you can do. And bring your awareness at the same time into your pelvis. So feel your feet and your pelvis at the same time. And we're going to kind of juice up the pelvis. Think about putting more energy into the pelvic girdle. You could think of it like a cooker. You want it to get really full and warm and bubbly. So feel your feet and your pelvis at the same time. And now allow a little bit of energy from the pelvis to rise upward, kind of like a vapor. Let it rise up through your diaphragm and flow up into your chest. And let it fill your chest more full. Feel your feet, your pelvis, and your chest at the same time. Stay focused if you can. Stay awake, stay conscious. Keep the mind focused in the body much as you can. And finally, take a little more energy from the head and let it drain down your neck and into your chest. Trying to get the head and the heart, the head and the chest, connected energetically. And now just rest a moment. Just sit quietly for a moment and rest inside yourself. Kind of do a scan from the top to the bottom and see if you notice that you feel more in one piece, more like a whole body. Also notice if there's a part that you have difficulty getting full. Just pay attention to that. You can take a moment to send more energy to that part, if that's true. And just come home to yourself. Just relax into your skin and be at home inside your skin for a moment. See what that feels like. Take a deep breath. And when you feel ready, open your eyes and stay focused in your body. Keep your feet heavy. As you open your eyes gently, see if you can stay grounded as much as possible. I'm going to make a real smooth transition to standing up and coming back into that circle. I want you to very slowly shift to standing. And it's really kind of a strange feeling. When you shift to standing and you come up to your full height, you'll actually feel that energy go whoop down into your ankles. So come up slowly. And see if you can feel that weight drop into the ankles. Like you've got feet, solid feet. And step forward a couple steps. You'll find your roots move with you. And let's go through that same going into the center of the circle exercise once more and just notice how it feels to be the center of attention again. Anybody can start.
For purposes of this tape recording, I've edited out the next 5 minutes of silence while the participants go into the circle to become the center of attention.
Good. Pull up a chair. Everybody okay? Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that whole process. What did you notice about any of that? First time, the grounding, second time? What was your experience?
I was actually surprised. I was much more anxious when I was on the perimeter than when I was in the center.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That was unexpected.
Yeah, to receive somebody's focus, yeah. It's pretty comfortable for you to be out in the center.
It's more comfortable to be in the center than to be on the perimeter, which is counterintuitive.
Yeah. So that tells me you're very good at giving attention, but receiving it is less easy. So learning to receive the group that you're speaking to is going to be real valuable for you. Yeah. Anybody else?
I noticed going around the first time when I came back to my place, I was aware that although it wasn't horribly anxiety producing, I mean, I was more relaxed than I thought I was going to be, but at the same time I felt some anxiety, and I was aware that of how, you know, I lose myself. I become tuned into the outside,
to them,
to the other person.
Yeah.
And have a hard time holding on to me and my own experience.
Yeah.
And when I did it, of course, the second time and was so much more relaxed, it was much easier to stay connected to my own experience as I went around, to kind of hold the other, but to stay more connected on the inside too.
Can you relate that to boundary? To the second time having a stronger sense of boundary.
Mm-hmm. It probably is. I don't think of it that way, but
yeah.
I think it is a better sense of boundary.
But I think you relate to that term.
Yeah, sure.
The second time through, because you're focused inside yourself. It's like you're in here and you're okay, and they're out there and they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
You're not getting over into
you're
them.
Spilling over.
You're not.
Into it losing that.
And losing yourself. Mm-hmm. People who are very intuitive and empathic and sensitive, we get over into them.
Mm-hmm.
It's like dumping ourselves out into them.
Yeah.
So learning to come back in here and hold the sense of grounding and boundary,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, makes it feel so much safer to connect. It's such a paradox to me,
mm-hmm.
that it is so much easier to connect to somebody else when I'm in here,
yeah.
and holding my boundary.
Well, it's more of a connection. The other is not a connection because you're not in it. You're just attending to the other person. So you're not really, it's not two people connecting at that moment.
That's brilliant.
So it's just one, you're kind of relating to yourself or to
what you think they are.
Projection.
Right.
Yeah.
So you're literally pulling your projections in psychological terms,
yeah.
when you ground.
I don't really use the word control, but I felt like I was in more control. I felt more secure.
That, yes, definitely. More control, more secure. Not control in a negative sense of controlling them, but of being in charge of your own energy and your own system. And more secure. That is so wonderful. The more grounded I become, the more safe in the world I feel.
I felt the second time I was not in my head in the same way, was not analyzing. The first time I went around, and you know, thoughts go through your head like, you know, I don't know.
Yeah.
Just about.
What do they think about me? What are they, you know?
What do I think about them? What do they think about me?
Right.
Those kind of thoughts,
mm-hmm.
were still there some, maybe, but much less.
Lesser. So you're more in a state of acceptance. Imagine giving a presentation and being in a state of acceptance of your audience.
Total acceptance.
Can you get that?
Yeah.
That feels good.
Yeah.
Acceptance of the jury.
I felt the urge to go out of turn the second time.
What do you mean?
I wanted to go here, then here, then here, then here. Then
oh,
here.
Cool.
But I didn't because I didn't want to come to the street the first day.
Oh, cool. What do you think that was?
I've
never
had. I noticed that you were the first one to go counter.
Counterclockwise.
Yeah.
You reversed the pattern.
I don't know. Just keep everybody off guard. Keep thinking.
Yeah, so you're a trickster.
Moving target.
Yeah.
Ralph, I found when you looked at me, there you were very effective. There's something about the presence that you have when you make eye contact.
He's very powerful, isn't he?
I don't know if you do that with jurors,
yeah.
on a regular basis, but when you actually make eye contact, there's...
Well, see, it goes either way. I mean, I found they either really like me or they really dislike me. you know, so...
So what I want you to learn from this process is that you're going to choose to like them and let them be, so that you start to unhook from concern about whether they like you or not and focus your attention on being there for them. As a presenter, when we get off of, when we let go of worrying about how we're doing and whether they like us or don't like us and start focusing on being present for them, it is very powerful. We become very effective.
Let's see, for me to be present for them, it kind of feels like what I was saying that I do before that's not good for me.
Yeah, no.
Which is to be too focused on the other.
There's a duality here.
Okay.
If I'm fairly well grounded in myself and contained, so I'm aware of being me and in me and what I'm thinking and feeling, at the same time I'm being there for you and I'm receiving you. It is a two-way flow of connection that is real powerful and real effective. It draws them into you so that you're not having to manipulate them. One of the things that lawyers can get into, because I've trained a lot of lawyers, is trying to manipulate the jury. When you let that go and you start being there to help them understand, you begin to magnetize them to you. And they begin to trust you and look to you to understand what the heck is going on in this crazy proceeding. Anything else? That you experienced? Noticed?
The energy was just very powerful when I looked at everybody in the eye. I could just, it felt fantastic.
Did you feel it go back and forth? Isn't that nice? You do too?
Yeah. I've never been involved in Toastmasters, but I got the impression that it was technique more than substance. I don't know if I've ever been involved in it.
I don't know, but whatever this was tonight.
What's what I mean, I felt something solid here.
I did have an experience to have. John O'Quinn actually spoke to us when I was at South Texas College of Law.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in and spoke to the room. And he made eye contact with every single person in the room.
Right.
And there were maybe 50 of us. And it was very, very mm-hmm. effective. And I felt energy
to and from
him. And I knew, I felt I knew what his game was. And even having said that, it was effective.
Yes. Yes.
And there was an energy that he...
It's magnetic, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So I want you to become magnetic presenters. So you don't have to work so hard to convince them. You draw them into you. I'm sorry.
It takes me back to the training, with the quotes, anyway, that I went through for this workshop presenter deal, and how there was a lot of emphasis at various points put on, you know, making contact with the people that you were speaking with, and as people would speak, and we'd give everybody feedback. And I was real aware in that process of when I was in the audience of how hungry I was for that contact from the speaker, that eye to eye contact, and
it's pretty rare too.
And you don't get it, and so it's neat to remember to give that.
Right.
You know,
that's right.
It's neat to remember to give that. To just really make that personal contact with the eyes, because we're all hungry for it. You know, we all feel disconnected, and we all want to feel that connection
more than anything.
Mm-hmm.
That reminds me of a distinction I've just made recently. Is you know, over time I work to shift from forcing and dominating,
yes,
or being forceful to get my point across. You said convincing. To enrolling others.
Yes.
But then even a higher order than that is attracting.
Yes. Yes.
That last distinction.
Yes.
I'm still working on this. Fits right into that, but your word is really wrong.
Yes. So that you will become attractive to your audiences, magnetic.
Isn't there an old saying that the eyes are the window to the soul?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I had that experience with all of you. I remember when Ralph looked at me, there's such a beauty that comes through your eyes when you make contact. It's very nice. So we're working kind of subtly, aren't we? We're working with subtle awareness, subtle energy. Subtle feelings. And as we work with them, we gain a sense of awareness about our own presence. I like to tell Tyrone Moncrief stories. A story I like to tell is this very powerful lawyer came to these classes, many of my classes, but he started out in these classes. And he came not because he had stage fright, but rather because he overpowered the juries. Tyrone is a criminal attorney here in Houston, and a very big, powerful, black presence. And he scared his juries. He intimidated them. His energy was so big and so powerful that he scared them. And that was hurting his trial success. Over time, he learned to get grounded and present and to draw the audience, in this case, the jury, to him. And he began to have experiences in the courtroom where he felt that he was really at one with his jury. And they began to come up to him after and make connection with him and talk to him because he had made such palpable connection with them during the case. And he started winning pretty much all of his cases, according to him. In 1995, he decided that he was going to compete in an international speech competition. And he had joined an organization that I'm not familiar with called the International Platform Association. And every summer they have a speech competition in Washington, D.C. And so in 1995, he had joined. He decided he was going to compete. He was a first-time competitor. And he wrote three little talks. And, you know, I coached him. We did some work together on them. And I just kept reminding him, Tyrone, relax, get grounded, receive your audience. So he tootled off to Washington, D.C. to compete. And he won the whole darn thing, which had never happened, that a first-time competitor won first place. He told me, I have a letter actually out there on the wall, that the top six competitors were fantastic speakers. They were Toastmasters and lawyers and actors, professionals, and they gave wonderful speeches. He did not win because his was the best speech. He won because not one of those other people were grounded enough to magnetize the audience. And he really opened to receive that audience and had them spellbound and felt really connected and at one with them. And afterwards, the judges, the other competitors, and the audience all came up to him and said, "What are you doing?" Because they could perceive that there was something else happening. So ever since then, they've invited him back each year to teach a workshop each summer on connecting to the audience. So we're kind of winding down now for tonight. Sort of done as much as I want to do tonight. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
I guess just a question about, I would imagine, the practicing the grounding.
Good question.
A similar process would be helpful.
Yeah. That's the only homework I have for you, that you practice the grounding, that you set aside 10 minutes a day to work on this so that you keep putting it into your body. It's cumulative. The more that you get grounded, the more your body begins to carry and hold the energy in that very contained, solid, grounded way. And it takes time. For most people, some of you are fairly grounded, much more so than I was. Space cadet. If you could see a picture of me before I started doing this grounding work, which was about 1988, 89, you wouldn't even recognize me because my presence is so much bigger than it was then. So it's cumulative, and I would like for you to work with that. If you can do it on your own, that's good. I also have it on tape. I sell a tape for $10. So if you need the tape to do it with, treat yourself. Other than that, there's no homework. There's nothing to prepare or work out for this group. The work will be done here in the space. And we will do the grounding each week. We'll do some warm-up. We'll do some very powerful breathing next week and some movement to get a sense of flow in the body. And then we'll do the grounding work as well.
You had warned somebody in one of the other classes who was using the grounding to go to sleep.
Yeah. Yeah. It's real easy to go to sleep.
You might want to warn everybody. Don't listen to this.
Yeah. Sit. Yeah.
That's not the idea.
It's not the idea. Thank you. Thank you. It's not a good exercise to be doing while you're driving, because it requires inner. Everybody wants to do it while they're driving. Don't, please. Do set aside. Do give yourself 10 or 15 minutes to focus internally. Anything else?
I just want to share that I really related to what you said, Jill, earlier about really feeling like this is the place that you, you know, your path is taking you, but for a reason. And I'm just really happy to be here with all of you. But I want to share with you, Sandra, when you were sharing earlier about this style or method that you learn and that you teach, you really touched the heart. You not only the way you express it, but I just see years of trying to fight through the difficulty.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a struggle. Painful. And difficult. And it doesn't have to be that way. And at some level I knew that, but you really touch on it beautifully. I appreciate that.
Oh, thank you so much. We can really shortcut this process. We can shortcut learning to develop this kind of presence through this.